Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden here. Chuck and Julie, straight up, truth straight up. We got a great show for you today. And it's brought to you, as always, by
ColoradoCitizenPress.com, one of the websites we check every day, Colorado's conservative voice. They have a great story up today on Governor Polis and transparency regarding the numbers. And actually, we've got Greg Lopez, the Republican gubernatorial candidate, joining us today. Also, Jeff Allen from the Greater Glendale Chamber of Commerce to talk about small businesses. And then Jan Cook, Colorado Freedom Force, with her weekly chime in on how to make sure your voice is heard. This is, by the way, the birthday edition
of
me.
The gorgeous one. The gorgeous
thank
one.
You.
The gorgeous
thank
one.
You. Here's my present. These are my cool sunglasses.
Yeah.
Maui Jims. That's right. Thank God for internet online ordering.
Well, put them on a little longer so people can enjoy them.
I had this old pair that were really, really cute, Greg, but they were not polarized, so I couldn't actually see anything in the sun.
Which is not important.
But yeah, I mean, I look great, but I couldn't see a thing in them. So these are my new. We really need to get the economy rolling again, because all I do in my spare time now is order stuff online. I don't even like
Luckily, I just play pool, so
yeah,
I'm okay.
Exactly.
Getting a little better, too. That's exciting.
But we got with this grassroots Republican, Greg Lopez, who is also the gubernatorial candidate for governor right now.
Ran last time, got on the ballot because he got the necessary percentage at the assembly to the chagrin of Walker Stapleton, and really did run a great race.
Yeah.
And he's back. I'm great to have him with us.
That's right. So, Greg, I guess wanted to reach out to you first of all and get your thoughts. And I know this is a softball loaded question, but if you were governor, right? I mean, how would you be handling this? Your thoughts on how Colorado is doing? And then, you know, bigger question part two is, what are your thoughts in terms of how we get and when we start getting the economy back up to speed again?
Well, you know, first of all, it's great to be on your show, you know, and thank you for having me. You know, one of the things I want to make sure that everybody fully understands is that I believe that it's during these times that we need to talk about facts, right? We need to make sure that we're looking at the real facts. And what I'm going to be sharing today is going to be a lot of the facts are coming from the CDC website, you know, the CDC.gov.
Right.
You know, and I can tell you that there's a lot of things that I would have done different than what our governor did. You know, but the one thing that I would probably do initially is I would not have encouraged, you know, the premise that if we go around living our normal lives and being out there and doing what we do, that we're going to be jeopardizing lives of other people, you know, because I think that does nothing but instill a fear of death into the mindset of all Coloradans. And I don't know that that's right in any stretch of the imagination. I think it's hurtful. I think it's damaging to the mental health of our young and of our young adults and, you know, just people in general. And so, you know, one of the things that I would do is I would encourage people to understand that, you know what, there are a lot of people that are surviving the coronavirus, you know?
Like 90%, literally. I think Polis even said, well, I mean, even well, 90% don't even have to seek medical attention, right?
And you're right. Exactly. You know, and that's what I'd be talking about. Yes, you know, there are people that are going to the hospital that are having a severe reaction to the coronavirus, but there is a lot of people that are going to be able to just weather the storm at home, you know. And when you go to the CDC and you look at their website, you know, and you talk about the comparison of the flu versus the coronavirus, it's very similar as to how people get infected. It's very similar on how they recommend that we protect ourselves, right? Wash your hands, stay at home if you're sick, do all those types of things. And yet, you know, the numbers show that just this past flu season, well, I should say from October 1 to March of this year, you know, the flu has had 24 to 60,000 deaths in the United States.
Right.
You know, and so I would share that information. I would encourage people to go to the CDC website and learn about it.
Right. Well,
assuming they could learn something from the CDC.
Yeah.
I mean, they're an amazing font of misinformation. A week before the CDC said wearing masks, you know, we sat on this program saying, you're crazy not to wear a mask.
Yeah,
it's crazy not to
have a mask.
You don't need a mask. It won't help you, et cetera. You kind of go, that's terrible advice. A week and a half later, oh, yeah, that's
everybody
right.
Has to
so I don't trust the CDC as far as you can throw them. I mean, they're
you bring up a good point, Chuck. I mean, look, the CDC, it is a government agency, right? So you have to evaluate. You have to evaluate what it is that they're trying to share with us. You know, and I'm hearing now, right, that the CDC is now making recommendations to the hospitals that if they believe that someone dies, that and if they feel that there's somehow a connection with the coronavirus, they just need to mark it up as a coronavirus death.
And you can't tell without a test whether someone has the flu and dies, which as you indicated, at least 24,000 Americans have this season, or it's the coronavirus. And they're not going to give them the test because they have a limited number of tests. So why do you want to give it to a dead person?
They're just going to make it up.
So they're just kind of making up. What I'd like to see would be helpful is tell us, okay, we had 1,000 deaths yesterday from coronavirus. How many flu deaths did we have yesterday? I'd like to know.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yes. Right. Well, I mean, we need to share real facts.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, and you bring up such a good point, which is keeping it in perspective. We talked about on the show Friday, I did a little bit of research, and this was astonishing to me because it's kind of stuff, you don't think about this, right? But every year in Colorado, 38,451 people die of everything, right? That comes to an average about 3,200 people a month die anyway, right? They're going to, I mean, and I would be curious, and the CDC, I think, call me cynical, but I think one of the reasons they've had this new rule that's like, if there is any reason you think coronavirus might be even remotely connected to this, just call it a coronavirus death. They want to justify their own thing. I would be real curious to see if in Colorado, okay, so we've had 140 deaths attributed to coronavirus in the past month. I'd be curious to see if that's actually a bump up from the average 3,200 we would expect, 3,200 we would have expected anyway, or not, right? And you're absolutely right. It seems like they're all going crazy to put this completely out of proportion, and there's social shaming and all this other stuff. And I just, we've said before, you got to wonder, is the cure worse than the disease? And I know I'm talking to a lot of people, older people, young people like all of us.
Like us, the young people.
And we've already concluded, yes. Yes, the cure so far is worse than the disease.
I totally agree. Look, just to talk a little bit about the possibility of these numbers, right, not being accurate or they're raising it. I can tell you, as you remember, I used to be the former director of the United States Small Business Administration here in Colorado.
That's right.
And I can tell you for a fact that my leadership in Washington called me and directed me to change my numbers as to what was happening in Colorado because they didn't believe that we were doing enough. And my response was, I'm not changing my numbers. My numbers are the numbers. Right. But to your point, right, you just never know who's asking who to do what. Yeah. But I have personal experience where the federal government had asked me to modify and increase my numbers just to benefit their agenda, which I refused to do. Yeah.
Right. Well, good for you, which is why you need to be governor.
And the one other thing, the Colorado Department of Health said, okay, we expect somewhere between the low end a little over 300 and the high end 33,000 deaths from coronavirus. You kind of go, why not just say one in a billion? I mean, when you're saying 300 or 33,000, you're not even guessing. You just go, I don't know. We have no idea. We don't know what we're talking about. It's just amazing stuff.
What? Uh-oh, looks like Tony froze. He didn't freeze. It looks like his internet froze.
Oh, no. We got frozen internet.
Hey, Tony, if you can.
Chuck.
You're back. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. You had a hard time hearing Chuck there. You said, you were head of the Small Business Administration.
Here in Colorado.
What kinds of things do you think, and personally, I think we need to be doing them now, right? But to start getting things rolling again, moving again, getting as many people, he's reconnecting. What we want to talk to him about then is as many people as we can back to work as soon as we can. And Tony, if you can hear me, or Tony, Greg, if you can hear me, that's what I wanted to ask you about. How do we get people back working here in Colorado?
That's going to be a tough one. And let me tell you why. Being a former director of the SBA and a small business owner, there is this analogy out there that when corporate America sneezes, small business catches pneumonia.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And small business is the heart and soul of every community across the 64 counties of our state. But to try to ask them to kind of just again, you know, to get back into the normal day-to-day routine. They're dealing with the uncertainty of when we're going to open. And it really is going to rely on us, right? The Coloradans to engage with small business again and making sure that we're buying small. You know, we can go to Walmart if we have to, but let's focus first, ask ourselves, is there a small business owner that I can help? Okay. Right now, my wife Lisa and I, we purposely look for small business restaurants that are still giving out, you know, where you can go and pick up your dinner.
Right.
You know, because we need help.
Now, we're doing that too. Chuck accused me of just not wanting to cook. And I have to confess, there is some truth to that. However, I'm doing my part, Colorado. That's right. You're absolutely right. You know, we've gone out to several restaurants and, you know, some of them deliver, some of them do, you know, you can go there and pick it up. But I agree with you. Particularly, it's kind of hard to find stuff at the grocery store right now. A lot of stuff is there. I don't want to scare people, but it just kind of depends on when you go.
Well, here's my other. I think the next 2 weeks we just have to ride with it. I mean, I looked at, as you said, you were looking at statistics. And I was looking. 2018 was a bad flu year. You know, up to
60%. It was. Yes.
And the trend was, it, you know, started in December, then went up, stayed up through March, and then plummeted. And most flus plummet in April with good weather. So I think if we see that pattern. And the number of deaths and hospitalizations start to dramatically go down. Then I think we really do have to have a whole program. And one of the programs I would have is that one county doesn't fit all counties. Just because, and their counties in
Denver is.
Yeah, Denver has one set of stimulus. There are people out on the plains kind of going, there's one person with coronavirus in this county. Why can't I go here and go there? So I think they got to make it specific for counties and what makes sense. But I'm afraid, you know, the Democrats don't like business. You know, they don't. They think they don't like small business in particular. They like big business at all.
Your point, Chuck, rural Colorado is the one that's suffering the most.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Because of the decisions that are being made in the urban corridor.
Right.
To your point, every county is different. Right. And they have a different way of life. They have a different way of engaging, you know, and we need to allow people to exercise their freedoms and their liberties, you know. And to your point, Chuck, I do believe that, you know, we're going to ride this wave. You know, we've been in these situations before as a country where we've been attacked by an invisible enemy and we go to war with it and we win. You know, I want everybody to recognize, you know, the spirit of life is winning this war with the coronavirus. You know, a third of death is dying because, you know, not as many people are dying as people are surviving. And so we need to be positive about what is happening. You know, and we need to talk clearly about the importance of our economy. And here's the one thing that I'm really concerned about, guys, is the mental health. The mental health of our young children, of our young adults, and adults in general. You know, I was talking to a young mother the other day, and she told me, she goes, Greg, my 5-year-old daughter came to me very anxious, almost to the point of tears, because she was worried that she would not be able to celebrate her 5th birthday with her friends because of the coronavirus and people dying.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was another woman, another mom that was talking to me and saying, Greg, I'm really worried about my 16-year-old son.
Oh.
You know, I think he's depressed. You know, he's not able to hang out with his buddies. He's sleeping all day. He's not eating right. And I don't know what to do to help him because of the stay-at-home order. You know, what can I do? You know, and then I'm hearing, that, you know, people are dying alone in the hospitals because they don't want family to come and visit them.
Yeah.
You know, that's not compassionate. That's not helping each other. You know, we've got to change the narrative.
You're right, Greg. I know I was saying right before the show started, we had a little bit of a third grade meltdown at our house today. It was pretty chaotic. And the kind of stuff that normally wouldn't have fazed him, it was just some confusion over the schoolwork, but it brought him to tears, right? And so I could tell he's stressed. And it all comes down to the same thing. You can't play with your friends. He worries about himself. He worries about us. He hadn't wanted to, I made him go for a walk yesterday. He hadn't wanted to go outside.
I do have to tell one story I told before. We were outside hitting golf balls and just a beautiful day and sun and everything else. And he turns to me and says, Dad, this is a great time to be a kid. And I go, and I'm expecting him to, I'm out with my dad and we're here. Right. And I said, why is that? He says, because kids aren't dying, just you guys. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, good point.
But you know,
like, out of the mouth of babes comes the truth, right?
That's right. But it does come. I've got a cousin and she's got a daughter who's stuck in a major city, right? And she said, I mean, their whole thing is they socialize a lot, bars, restaurants, that's all right. Closed down. She's totally depressed, is probably too strong, but she's feeling very isolated. And I think you're absolutely right, Greg. I think that we need to start talking about, is this really what we need to do? Or are there right. other, maybe more specific tactics we could take rather than, you know, just this massive sledgehammer, right? And hammering us all down. Maybe we can be a little bit more strategic.
Look, Julie, if you look at this, and I'm sure you guys have too, and I'm just saying this for the listeners and people who are watching, you know, we all recognize that this is a new virus, which means nobody really has an immunity to it. You know, I was talking to a healthcare professional in the federal government, and he was just yesterday, and he was telling me, you know, Greg, the odds of each one of us getting it is probably going to happen because there is no immunity to it, right? And so a lot of people are going to be okay with it. Some of us might not, but until we build up an immunity within our systems, you know, there is always a risk, just like the flu, that you're going to get it, right. You know, and we haven't ever shut down the economy because of the flu.
Right.
You know, we haven't gone through these types of situations where we're saying small businesses, close your doors, wear a mask, you know, stay 6 feet away. I mean, it really is kind of, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of like the book, you know, 1984, you know, what's going on? You're hearing a lot of stuff and it's a little discouraging to see how many people are so willing to follow the direction of our leader.
Yeah,
right.
Well, and they tried. I guarantee, and I'm sure you've heard it too, you know, we get pushback from this show from people saying, oh, we're Nazis. We just want old people to die. And we're old people. I mean, I'm not. No, I mean, technically, I don't know. I must not have looked that great at the grocery store today because a grocery store lady pointed out that I could come earlier than people, you know, and all. I'm like, oh, maybe spruce up a little bit before I come.
Look,
the mask wasn't.
I truly believe that our country right now, and even the state of Colorado, is what I consider a moral panic. You know, we're having a moral panic and it's destructive and it's hurting not only our way of life, but not only for the short term, but for the long term. We have yet to really realize the impacts that this is going to have for us as individuals, our families, our mental health, everything, you know. And I've talked to people that say, Greg, with the market that's what's going on, I've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've been saving for retirement. I've been doing this and I see it just disappear, you know, right in front of me. And so these are the types of things that I think, you know, a governor should be given words of encouragement, words of optimism, you know, being cautious and being truthful, but also letting people know that, you know, we're going to survive this. Well, this is not a death sentence.
They hammer on Trump, right? They say, don't you think there's something wrong with you being positive? And it's like, no, right? It's exactly what you said. You give the facts.
Well, another one I don't get. Okay, so Trump sort of promotes, or at least says it might work, is hydroxychloroquine. You know, it's been used for malaria for decades. It's pretty cheap. It's been out there for a long time and no more patents on it and anything else. And all of a sudden, it's a huge fight going, no, the governor of Michigan prohibits any doctor from prescribing it. And then she says, okay, Trump, give me more of it. I mean, it's just the sickness.
Politics.
They say, well, it hasn't been double tested, you know, which the only way you double test it on sick people is allow some people to die untreated, which isn't real popular these days, which is why only tests have been for mild symptoms, because it's a little hard to say you may get the placebo and die. But the idea you wouldn't try it is just, and apparently Peter Navarro, the trade representative, Dr. Fauci got in a huge fight. And Navarro's going, what are you talking? Why are you telling people not to do it, you moron? He goes,
here's the thing, right? I mean, there's this strong belief in our healthcare system that we can save everybody, right? That we can create miracles, you know, and when we run into a hiccup like this, and I'm confident that after a period of time, we're going to come up with some type of treatment. It's probably not going to be a cure, but it's going to be something that's going to help. You know, and at the end of the day, we just have to be able to take a leap of faith and try certain things that a lot of people would say, well, we don't know if it's going to work or not. Well, you know what? Given this stay-at-home order, I'm sure that that's going to work or not.
Right. Good point.
At least the other one destroyed the economy. Hey, Greg, we've got some phone calls coming in, so we'll take a phone call for you. We've got Father Hugh on the line. Hey, Hugh, good afternoon.
Hello, Julie. And I know this won't apply to you. I know what the reception I would have gotten growing up. Bear in mind, New England.
Okay.
If I had said, oh, I'm 16 and I can't hang out with my friends, the reception would have been
a beating.
And do some work.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that would be it. And it blows me away. I understand. And by the way, just so you know, I'm also a believer in Justice Jackson's maxim, which you both know, that the Constitution is not a suicide pact.
Yeah.
Some things need to be done. And I have faith that the measures that have been taken, although terrible on some people, will result in a shortening of the time. I also don't like Fauci. But
yeah, good.
Anyway,
or bricks. I can't see. Bricks. Don't go to the grocery store the next 2 weeks. What?
Yeah.
You're trying to get a run on grocery stores?
And you know, okay. I'm going to glue together a couple of things that will appeal to both of you being legally oriented.
Mm.
All right. So we found out in the leaked disclosures of the insider trading by Feinstein and Burr. But a meeting was held in the White House in January.
Right.
And this was talked about.
Right.
That's how they got their little insider tips.
Right.
And so my question is, and then from the sound of it, Fauci dismissed it as inconsequential. And I just want to say, you know, we need some changes need to be made. And Fauci is one of them. And then it's Chuck's point. Bring in the hydroxychlorine, whatever it's called.
Hydroxychloroquine.
Not the fish tank cleaner, but the other stuff. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Israel gave us 6 million units. Use it. And I'll close on one of my other maxims. The perfect is the enemy of the good.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Good point.
Meaning, use it. It you know, if people won't die, oh, my one final, I'll keep on promising final, one, burn down the FDA.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be
burn
helpful.
Burn it down, because I've kind of followed us through the journal. And by the way, do you get a subscription to the Epoch Times?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it's matchless. I mean, mm-hmm. there are nuggets there that don't appear anyplace else. And one of them, forgotten. I got off on a. Basically, the FDA, besides the fact that they stalled the right to try bill for years and years and years, affected my mother.
Oh.
My mother had Lou Gehrig's. Her constitution was virtually ironclad, and it counted against her because she lasted 8 years, if you can believe it. Anyway, bottom line was, at one point, we thought, well, that's great. There's an experimental. Let's go for it. No dice.
No.
Some guy in the FDA. I'm sorry, Julie. Go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say, we want to get back to Greg, but thank you for calling in.
Pardon me. I didn't know I was expendable.
We're all not essential. You are not essential,
Hugh. Who is this guy?
Greg Lopez.
Candidate, he ran last time, took on Walker.
Yeah,
got
terrific
ballot.
Guy. Okay, right. That's fine. But, you know, his insights are no better than the rest of us.
I know. All right. Okay. You think?
Sorry, Greg.
That's okay. I appreciate it.
Greg, let me ask you, because we only have a few more minutes with you. I wanted to kind of switch over. One of the evil things the Democrats are doing is they're saying, see, this is why we need all mail balloting.
With unlimited harvesting.
With unlimited ballot harvesting, et cetera, et cetera. Just having experienced the results of that here in Colorado, your thoughts on that?
You know, I am not a supporter of the mail ballot. You know, I think there's a lot of ways that you can manipulate the system. You know what? And as you recall, I was a mayor in Parker.
Right.
You know, I was the youngest mayor in the state at the time, and my council wanted to always go to the mail ballot, and I always pushed back and said, look, it is a patriotic duty for us to be able to stand in line and cast our vote, because women and others went through a lot for the right to vote, you know. And if we need to do, instead of just everybody vote on Tuesday, if we need to go to Tuesday and Wednesday to get everybody to vote, I would much rather have people show up and vote on their own, right, versus having these parties where they're all getting together and voting, you know, simultaneously and saying, hey, let's all vote for this one person. And they don't even know exactly what it is that they're voting on because they haven't done the research, you know. So I'm not a strong advocate for the mail ballot, and I do see why the Democrats might want to push it in that direction. It's because they figured out the system and they figured out how to best utilize it to achieve what they feel is in the best interest of their agenda.
Put a kibosh on that. Well, let me, final question for you then. I am so glad that, I know it's early, but that you're in the race. I think if nothing else, this crisis shows why we need Republicans in the state government, right? It's total Democrat control. There is no one even to challenge what Polis is doing. No one even to raise the question, right? Where can people find out more about you, and where can they help?
You know, they can go to my website, Lopez4Governor2022, and you spell out the word for, right? So it's Lopez4Governor2022.com. That's my website. And I ask people if they can to donate, you know, $10 a month, $5 a month, whatever they can on a recurring basis. And I'm going to tell you that we are going to make Governor Polis a one-term governor, not only because of what he's doing now, but what he's done last year with the legislature and all the bills that got passed. I mean, if there is a silver lining, at least we know the legislature is not holding session.
Yeah.
And they're not
passing
laws.
Now they're continuing on, so they'll get to screw us as we go along.
Exactly. And look, and you know this for a fact. He's going to come back and say, now we got to get rid of Tabor because.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. No question.
We lost all this revenue, right? And now we got to get it all back.
Oh, yeah. No question. We need major new taxes to help everybody.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right. Hey,
okay. Great to see you. Great to talk to you. And best of luck with your campaign.
Thank you, guys. You guys take care.
Okay. Bye bye.
There's Greg Lopez. Go to Lopez. You can check him out there. We're hoping to get Jeff Allen with the Greater Glendale Chamber of Commerce coming up with us here in a second. In the meantime, I see Jan Cook. We were going to talk to her at 3:40. Jan, if you're paying attention and are ready, feel free to kind of unmute yourself and jump in right now. But otherwise, I think one of the things we could talk a little bit more about the numbers. One of the things that I think so many people, myself included, are starting to get frustrated about are every time you turn around, they're throwing out different numbers, right? It's, you know, so first like 80 million Julian people are going to die. Then it's like, oh, maybe it'll just be like this many, right? And then, oh, I see Jeff Allen is coming on. So
there he is.
And I think it gets very frustrating because you're trying to figure out, I mean, it's going to be hard, I imagine, for policymakers as well. But it's tricky because every time they turn around, it's a whole different number. And I think, like you said, the CDC, now they're saying, well, if it even might remotely, if they knew somebody who knew someone who knew someone who had coronavirus, call it a corona death, it's they're rigging the system. So I see, hey, Jeff, can you hear us, see us?
Yes.
Okay, we got Jeff Allen. He's the COO of the Glendale Chamber of Commerce and a great small business advocate, and we wanted to get him on to talk about small businesses because I think Greg said correctly, if big businesses get a cold, small businesses get pneumonia or ventilators. And then they talk about, oh, we got to help the small businesses. And you go, yeah, how are you going to do that? By giving the big businesses lots of money and tax breaks, that's how we're going to do it. There you go.
So, Jeff, what are you hearing and what are folks saying to you?
A couple of things. First, the paperwork, it may be the same for all, but for a big business that knows their way around it quite routinely, it's not as daunting. Some of the small businesses are really having a lot of difficulty. Never been through anything like this. I had one business tell me that it really appears a little bit like an audit, a lot like an audit. And then we were on a call this morning with Senator Gardner, and so many of these businesses can apply for the loans, and there is an assumption there that they will get that loan. But the key word there is apply. And where we're concerned is, especially for the businesses that are in our chamber and in our trade area, is preparing for those that do not get their application approved.
Right.
How are they going to weave their way through an appeal process? Got a little bit of an answer on that this morning that sounds good if it holds true. And that is that these SBA loans, they're going to stand behind them. And they've opened up some new banks and some new credit unions to process these. But that was after some arm twisting. For example, Bank of America originally was not going to even accept applications unless the people doing business with them currently. They've now loosened up on that.
Ah.
So that is a difficulty, and we're one of the difficulties is there just is. These businesses just don't have room for delay. And it's not their fault. It's nobody's fault that this happened.
Well, they're going to have less capital. They're a small business. They're not going to have years to be able to absorb it. Any small business is by its very nature
right.
a precarious position. I mean, that's the nature of having a small business. If you're, 3M or something, you don't have that problem. And they can quickly duck into Chapter 11 with all their attorneys and duck out and everything else.
And Jeff, let me ask you about this. I saw reading Racine's, which has been one of my favorite restaurants in Denver for decades, right? It's closed now. They're going to reopen when all this ends, but then they're going to close again in January. And they cited some of the things the government is doing. They said, for instance, their property tax skyrocketed, right? Talking about Denver's minimum wage. They said just a number of anti-business measures. Let me ask you this. So am I right in the way they kind of assess the taxes? It's in 1 year. So my property tax may have gone up like $1 billion, which was happened a lot in Denver. But that's not reflective anymore of what really is going on right now. Can they appeal that or change it? Or are they still going to be stuck paying? I think in Racine's they were saying it went like literally something from like $30,000 a year to like almost $80,000 a year. Are businesses going to be stuck paying based on the previous assessment?
That's our understanding. And it really comes down to two words. It's your problem.
Yeah.
And that's really, and then good luck getting into the mud of trying to get appeals and forgiveness and forbearance and so forth. It's not going to exist. And just to hit Chuck's point right there, what is really happening where small businesses now are under another threat. I was talking to a business owner the other day, well-capitalized, well-positioned business, and they're looking at it as just an opportunity for them to go after market share. And so not only now will businesses have the burden of a cash flow issue and additional paperwork, they're going to see ratcheted up the competition coming after their customers. And so they're really going to take it on a couple different areas. It's a little bit like when I said the last time that we visited, this, I think, can drive some folks to just say, I just can't do it anymore.
What was your impression of Cory Gardner, if you don't mind us asking?
No, he was helpful. He was interested in hearing what people had to say. There were a handful of comments of industries that we hear of, or I'm sorry, businesses that we hear of that aren't covered, immediately are not covered. And he's interested. He's putting a staff on it to deal with those that fall outside the eligibility.
Okay.
His big point, which was, is that when this money is out, they're going to find a way to get more, which is
scary.
You're pitching or catching, because it is a problem. But the things that we left with that is that there's not going to be a temptation on the part of government to leave businesses alone. By that I mean leave them out there to dangle on their own, and so they'll continue to fund it, and that's a problem. We've all said, we've got to get the country back to work.
Right. The sooner we get the government out of there, the better businesses will be.
There just are no help. And when I got finished with that call and took a look at the paperwork the other day, the answer is that those who are not really prepared to be self-sufficient can't make it.
Right. And that's going to be, well, and as you said, the paperwork, we filled out the one in Denver, right? Because the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle is located in Denver. And initially, we were pleased. We're like, oh my gosh, it only took like 10 minutes. It was very clear, very straightforward. Then we got an email back saying, okay, thank you for filling out that questionnaire. Yeah. Now here's the real application. And you go through it. And it asks, like you said, it's
are you in an enterprise zone? Oh, you're not. Are you business? Are you that? Are you this?
And here's the other thing. And the question was, some of it was like, for instance, was your income down? So this would be for the month of March, right? More than 20% over the previous March. Well, I would imagine that for a lot of businesses, things didn't really start to get that hard hit till maybe later in March. So your answer might be no, but it's like, but I'm totally screwed now that we're in April. I mean, so it, you're right. It is.
Everything's crooked. It has to do with government. Right. Crooked.
And these answers have to come from someone that's not that person. And so then to go find that person, one of the original complaints I heard was a 10-page request for information that was things that wanted to know a 12-month trailing. They wanted identification of employees, not things that are readily available. And
and as you said, I've heard some from other people too that their suspicion is because all of this gets turned over to the IRS, right? So it's essentially an audit, right? So you're having to essentially.
Oh, by the way, we're not going to lend you money.
We're not going to lend any money, but we are going to. Yeah, we are going to.
$25 billion.
Well, if they do come in to audit you, I guess you could say, here's my response to your audit because I've already done.
They usually have their response to that.
I think take some money out of them.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, when you talk to people, and I do actually want to give you guys, I think the greater, and I don't know, we're not affiliated with other chambers, so I don't know if they're doing this, but I will say the Greater Glendale Chamber of Commerce. I mean, I'm getting an email from you guys regularly explaining, here's the latest, here are the forms. Right, I mean, you guys are one-stop shopping you're saying, here's stores that are open. If you're a business, I mean, you guys, I think are doing
whatever you can,
whatever you want.
It's a balance. We want to keep people informed, but too much information can get too boring. It can get lost in clutter. So we're in a tough spot. Really what we're just trying to tell them is if we can help you, we want to. If we can't, one of the beauties of our chamber is that we have lenders that are great members. We have attorneys that are great members. We have accountants that are great members that we can get you connected and we can get you an answer that you can use. And you can proceed. And if nothing else, we can save you some time. Right. And so really, that's really what it is. And then the other thing is we're just trying to remain close so that when we are back in business and this is off, our businesses aren't starting at zero. We want to be starting, leaving the stop 20 miles an hour.
Let me just a couple more questions. That's one thing I've talked to with a couple of businesses. For instance, my brother is in the construction industry, right? And he said, we're okay right now because we're working on projects. Those projects have the financing. It's not going to go away for the most part. But he said, this is a time of year when I would be selling for a year and a half out. Right. And he said, so he was concerned. He said, I'm going to make it through this period. But he said, a year and a half from now, I'm going to be in trouble and everyone's going to be like, what coronavirus? I mean, do you have other businesses that are in that kind of thing too?
First off, he's exactly right. Where I have a problem, and I'm worried about it from our businesses that maintain a storefront. Mm-hmm. I was talking to one of our larger members this morning, and they were telling us that for years they have been being told by their staff that we can work from home. And now that has been shown to be the case. So think about it from a second. If you're a property owner with a lot of retail space or a lot of office space in real problems. So where I think things come back, if people will come out and they'll have confidence, and some of our financial advisors in our chamber will talk about this, that we'll be okay if there's consumer confidence. If consumer confidence has taken a hit, if people are just too gun-shy to come out, they don't want to be in a crowd or whatever the case might be, that's where the worry is. Everything else really inside of our chamber and our members are geared. They're service businesses. The storefronts are where I think the problem is, but we primarily are a concentration of service-oriented business. So we do have retail storefront, right. But our heavier concentration is in service-oriented businesses.
All right. Well, they're going to need all the help we can get.
Jeff, keep up the good work, and we'll
thank you very much.
All right.
It's good to see you, and good luck with the show. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come on a visit with you.
Well, we appreciate it. We appreciate it so much. Jeff, thank you very much. Jeff Allen there.
We've got Jan on. Before Jan comes on, I want to make a voting pitch. I am running be a delegate in CD7 for the convention in Raleigh. I think there are about 10 of us running, not 12. So if you're in CD7, I'd love to have your vote. Obviously, I'm grassroots, pro Trump and everything else. So if you're in CD7, and we're going to have our meeting by Zoom, which will be interesting.
Thursday. So
Thursday.
Vote for Chuck.
Vote
second,
for me.
Second vote student me. Council. Vote for
and,
Chuck.
Everyone. And I have a feeling if you're on the inside, you know. But you never know. It may be on the other.
Vote for Chuck. Okay, now we've got Jan Cook, Colorado Freedom Force. Jan, you got so much going on. I never even really know where to start with what to ask you about. But one of the things that you do so well, and I just appreciate all the sharing that you do with us and our listeners, is I think you just have just a real knack for finding where people are not being transparent, mm-hmm. right? We talked about some of the, you know, the funds and the relief funds and things like that. You found out, hey, it's not even going to businesses.
Yeah.
You had some other stuff going on, and maybe let's start there with the Tri-County Health Department and letters to the editor and things like that.
Yes, and I also have some breaking news about the due date too late signature too. Wait till you hear this. And I just uncovered this little tidbit today. But getting back to the Tri-County Health Department, as you know, we have a stay-at-home order that's actually more punitive than the actual state Governor Polis's stay-at-home.
Right.
Well, it turns out that we have three commissioners that represent Adams County, Arapahoe, Douglas County. Two of the commissioners, Laura Thomas and Roger Partridge, were not in agreement with the stay-at-home order, and they made that known to the commissioners. These commissioners are appointed by the three commissioners.
Okay.
Clayton was the one dissent. He actually was for the stay-at-home order. Well, I was reading the Highlands Ranch Herald, and you can get it online if anybody wants to look this up, and the title of the article was Letter to the Editor, Kudos to Layden, Abe Layden. And I just want to quickly read this. It's very short.
Okay.
I want to make you aware of an unflagging support that was given to the Tri-County Health Department stay-at-home order by County Commissioner Abe Layden. From the very beginning, I was assured of his support, which he considered a necessary healthcare issue, not a political one. I think we are very lucky to have such an elected official, resident of our community, who puts our health needs first above all else. Thank you.
Oh,
here's the catch. Thank you, Marsha Jarrock. She spells it, her last name, J-A-R-O-C, Lone Tree. There's no mention that she's one of the board members on Tri-County Health Department.
Oh, well, what do you know?
And
transparency.
And that she represents Douglas County.
Yeah. Really? Oh, great.
So in other words, the person who is on the board that is...
Yes.
Decision that two of the other commissioners were against, writes a letter neglecting to mention that she's on the commission, praising
yes.
this, you know. And Jen, what's so important about that is, I think as we go through this, you know, Jared Polis was finally forced to reveal what models he was looking at, thanks to people like Patrick Neville and Chris Hobart, who were writing him. I mean,
yes.
transparency is crucial in this day and age. If she wanted to write that letter, great. But
fine.
She to acknowledge her complete conflict of interest or at least vested interest.
Well, what's interesting is when I wrote to, and I'll give the Chris Rotar, R-O-T-A-R, the editor for the Highlands Ranch Herald, when I wrote to him and said, look, this is lacking transparency, he actually wrote back to me that, no, he said, interesting, I didn't know this. updated the online. You can go online and read the letter now, and it's updated with that complete information. But here's the problem. You both know that when the story gets out there, people move on. Who's going to go back and reread that letter if we didn't happen to mention it today?
Right. Right. No, you're at, and I think just government officials, they need to right now be worrying not so much about covering their own patooties, right? They need to be transparent. They need to say if they're right, they're right. If they're wrong, they were wrong.
That's not how politics works.
Well, I know. It's my birthday.
Keep something else in mind. All three of the representative for Douglas County voted for the stay at home when a majority of the commissioners appoint them. Voted, asked them not to vote for it, number one. And number two, the entire delegation for Douglas County, that means the minority House leader, Patrick Neville, right. The Senate minority leader, Hulbert, all of the representatives, Senate and both House, collectively, along with Commissioner Thomas and Commissioner Roger Partridge, all agreed that they did not agree with this letter. And so keep in mind that this person is calling out one individual out of the entire delegation for supporting it, but never mentions that the rest of the delegation did not.
Right. Well, and again, I think it's just, you have these health officials, and I get it's their job to be worried about the coronavirus, right? That's their job. But then the rest of other elected officials have other things to worry about. And that's why, and we've talked about this before, and I'll let you move on after this, but that's why to me it is so alarming that we're letting just this very specific group of health officials determine everything for all the rest of us. It's like
unelected bureaucrats.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Right, well, okay. Talk about some of your other stuff.
Here's my breaking news.
Okay.
I had a number of people ask me, how do I find out if my signature that I get for the due date too late and late term abortion in Colorado counted? I didn't know. So I contacted the Secretary of State's office to find out how individuals can learn whether they are considered invalid or valid. I used myself as the test case.
Okay.
I was listed as adjudicated invalid.
Oh.
And wait till you hear this. The person from the Secretary of State's office, and I have his name and I'm not going to say his name, said, you should have been validated, not invalidated.
So it's screwed up. It's okay. So folks, if people aren't familiar, Jan Cook with Colorado Freedom Force, you are one of the primary people involved in handing out the petition. I mean, if anybody should not be invalidated, it would be you.
Well, and not only that, I was collecting the signatures. I actually helped at the very beginning getting to the organizers the training materials that you work with to ensure that you get accuracy on your signatures.
Right.
I was in the very beginning process just being a team player, helping them to understand how to ensure that their volunteers are gathering the information. I'm the person who doesn't make it. And he said, there's nothing wrong with your line. There's no reason for you not to have been validated. You should have been validated.
And so, what did they correct it?
I'm going to let the organizers know so that they do get a spreadsheet.
Right.
I'm going to cross-reference now whether my name is even listed on their sheet that says these are the names that were rejected.
So, and we want to go right back to like the second day that Jenna Griswold, the Colorado Secretary of State, was in office, where we all learned that she is taking marching orders from Planned Parenthood, right? So number one, we have like massive questions about her objectivity on this day too late issue anyway, right? And they earlier put out, I guess there were news stories saying that the petition did not gather enough signatures, but they had time to go back and try to get them. But
it's called a cure period.
Right. But what you're saying is that we know of at least, and that's just maybe yours is the only valid one that they wrongly invalidated.
But here's something else that's interesting. We had an unprecedented high accuracy rate. Okay. So once the first that goes is they check to see the accuracy rate, the validity rate that due date, due late received from the Secretary of State was 97.51%.
You're kidding.
Prior to them then going through line by line, each of the signatures, okay? So I am, actually I'm glad. If I had to be the person that was invalid, I'm thrilled because it's one of the worst mistakes they could have made. In terms of that I'm very engaged, very involved, and for me to be invalidated is stunning. And let me just say this, I've lived in the same home and have not changed my registration for 12 years, for decades. Well,
that throws you out right there, though.
So what did they do? I mean, did they give you any? Well, you said that actually when you called them and said, why was it invalid? They said, oh, it shouldn't have been. But it still
it should have been.
Right. So what they do, just go through and say, we want to make everything we can. We want to do everything we can.
What would Planned Parenthood do?
Right. And it's like, we want to make sure this does not get on the ballot. So we're just going to ask, I don't know what other word there would be for that, Jan, except crooked.
Well, the thing that's very important right now, because we got that stay, that judgment,
right,
that we do not have to go into the cure period until the stay-at-home ban is lifted. And I will be communicating with the organizers because they don't even know. I just found all this out. I was on the phone while you were interviewing Greg Lopez. That's how fresh this
wow.
is. You know, so we chance to tell anybody.
So can I, so for instance, I signed the petition. Can I call them up and
yes.
ask? If, okay. So let me maybe let's do this as a favor to people. Do you want to tell people how to do that? And is that what you're recommending or do you have a different recommendation?
I think I'm going to wait, but what okay. I would challenge you to do is contact them and find out whether your signature was valid or not.
Okay.
And just see, but I'll also check to see if your name is on the spreadsheet that the organizers received. I can do that.
Okay.
To, but this was a question that a lot of petitioners were asking. How do I know? And I asked them, just like, you know, when you vote, you want to know where your ballot is. You can go online. You can find out whether they received it. I wanted to see if there's an automated process that Jan Cook, the voter, can go in to right. see if my signature was counted as valid or not. I think we've opened up the door for an opportunity to maybe get a statute or something in there that...
Right.
We citizens, if we signed, we can see whether our signature was validated or not.
Right, right. And then we can, if nothing else, well, that'd be helpful to you guys because I could call and say, hey, Jan, you may not know this, but mine was...
How much did your petition fail by?
I don't... Oh, shy of 10,000 signatures. Just shy of 10,000.
Okay, okay. Well... That's astonishing news. And that's thank once again, I'm like, Jan Cook, you are on it. I don't know what the state would be doing without you, really.
Well, it's just a matter of always wanting to understand the process, right? And it's not that difficult if more of us could get engaged. And that's what at Colorado Freedom Force we're trying to do is just get everybody to do a little bit of their part to make a difference. And if I may segue, if
sure.
do go to ColoradoFreedomForce.com and click on Get Involved. We would love for them to sign our new citizen action petition that we want to deliver to the legislature, which is asking them to only when they reconvene, to please reconvene only to do essential business, the budget, the school act, the rules bill, and whatever COVID-19 emergency funds come in, that they only work on those four things.
Right.
And quite frankly, treat it like it was a state emergency. If it's a state emergency and you've got us all working from home and, you know, doing this, you know, 6 feet distance, you know, social distancing and all the things that we have had to endure over the last few weeks, the 401ks that have shrunk, the businesses that have closed down. It's amazing. Can they at least just do the essential businesses business at the legislature?
And I signed your petition and I absolutely agree with this because you know they're going to come in and they're going to be like, okay, now we need to get rid of Tabor. We need to do this. Mm-hmm. They're going to, you know, we need to have safe injection sites because all these people now can't get their heroin and it's going to, you know, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. This is not the time for them to be pushing their agenda. Now, who knows if they're going to care about it.
Right.
But I think that you guys are doing,
they'll be limited by the fact there's no money, but they will figure out ways.
Sure.
Lifting agenda as much as they possibly can.
As much as they can. So, all right. Well, Jan, final question.
We'll keep you updated.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jan.
Anything else going on you want people to know about?
I think those are the main things. Stay tuned for more on this due date too late and what's going on with these signatures. I'll keep you abreast of that as well.
Thanks,
Jen.
All right,
Jen. Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
That's astonishing. Although not shocking, like I said, Jenna Griswold, you know, if people don't remember back when she was first elected, there were memos being leaked, and it turned out she was having the Planned Parenthood.
Give the answers.
When she was saying, oh, we're not going to let my state employees go here or there because of what abortion decisions in other states. In Alabama. Like all the, Colorado Secretary of State people always travel to Alabama.
They love Alabama.
You know, but the Planned Parenthood, it turned out, was actually writing the press releases. Is it shocking, Chuck, that they're saying, oh, look, Jan Cook, one of the most organized, you know, one of the persons involved in circulating the petitions, hers is invalid.
Well, the trust in government is so low in Colorado at this point.
For good reason, I think.
It's a one-party state.
We've got a few minutes if people want to call in, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. All of this, though, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, I think, with Greg, the transparency is particularly important. I think
government doesn't go by transparency. It likes to say transparency, just like the stimulus that Obama put out. They had all these kind of fake transparency things, but do they really want to tell you how they came up with the business? No. I mean, the government never does. They want to hide, they want to pretend, and they want to use the word transparency. And at one time you could sort of trust the Secretary of State, but you no longer can.
No, it's crazy.
Or a county clerk you can't trust. I mean, you really can't trust really any of them. And so that's just, don't trust and verify.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
what,
don't trust and verify
and see if you can get it, because that's the sad
stuff.
And
I see our friend Ben tuning in here. Hey, Ben, you want to chime in on all of this?
I did. I just wanted to hear. Did I hear something right? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. Why don't you explain what that is and why it's important?
No, I think that's very important because whenever you become a national delegate, three national delegates are elected at the Congressional District Assembly.
Okay.
So each of our seven congressional districts select three delegates and three alternates. The remaining, about 13, if I remember correct, 17. Are elected at the state assembly. Yeah, now, 17. Our state assembly is going to be conducted also online here.
Right.
So I think that there's hundreds of people that wanted to do this at the CD7 meeting the last time. So now you're just down to, I think, 8 or 10 of you.
Odds are increasing.
Huh? That's right. And I think that, no, it's over with. That's all that there is. Just you 8 or 10. So it's important that when people are electing a representative, that they select the right person who shares their values and their principles. And that's huge. That's you, Chuck, for me.
You'll be attending CD7, won't you, Bobby?
I can't. The position I hold, as you know, is the IEC. I had to surrender and back away from any voting or hold a position that had that ability.
Oh, well.
So, all right.
I would have supported you.
No, that's right.
Chuck for CD7. Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
We only got about a minute left here, so we want to wrap it up. I want to remind folks, the show brought to you by ColoradoCitizenPress.com. It's one of the websites I check every day, Colorado's Conservative Voice. I got a great article on there today talking about how they pushed Jared Polis to release some of the numbers that he's working off of.
It's really the only site you can go to in Colorado to get things from a conservative perspective. You've got Colorado Peak Politics, that's run by consultants and some others.
But that's right. And so so today, want to kind of promo on Wednesday, I think what I really want to talk about is this push by the Democrat Party for all mail balloting and unlimited ballot harvesting. We've seen in Colorado for Republicans why that is so dangerous. And I think it bears talking about, because I think we have people in other states who are listening and we need to tell them, you got to watch out for this. I think that the Democrats are now.
Well, Nancy Pelosi is for it. They should
say, right there. Go further.
Yeah, it's in Colorado. It's really Colorado's really a purple state, but they crooked it with the ballot harvesting. Not just the mail-in ballots. That would have been fine.
It's the
ballot harvesting. As we've had people like Patrick Neville say, the district attorneys, who are mostly Democrats, will not enforce the laws, and so they cheat. You know, it's like being in Mississippi in 1920. It really is.
Hey, listen, but that's going to do it for us, everybody. Check out chuckandjulie.com. Subscribe to us on YouTube.
And vote for Chuck on CD7.
Vote for Chuck on CD7. And thanks to the guys at BBS Radio. We'll see you next time.